ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Derelict island resorts that were once the playgrounds of the rich and famous are facing takeover from the Queensland government.
Essentially, it's the lifestyles of the rich and the famous. So you get many different billionaires, multimillionaires, high net worth individuals that, you know, they're looking for something, some kind of tourism investment.
And we head to a tourism town on the other side of the country in Western Australia's south, where continual power blackouts is scuppering local businesses.
While the locals are a population of about 300-400 and the majority are 15,000-20,000+ tourists, we're not just going to give an IOU. So, I mean, we lost thousands here at the store.
I'm Sinead Mangan and this is Australia Wide, coming to you from Whadjuk Country, Perth. A cold snap has hit the Victorian Alpine region and the central tablelands of New South Wales, bringing with it lots of snow. Emergency crews are on call to rescue anyone stuck in the freezing conditions after a heavy snow hit the area over the weekend. The conditions proved tough for rescuers who pulled 13 people out of the snow who were trapped in their cars near Dargo High Plains Road at Mount Hotham in the Victorian Alpine region. Our reporter, Ashley Aldridge, was at Bright at the bottom of Mount Hotham when I spoke to her. Ashley, what are the conditions like and how are they impacting the rescues at the moment?
So it's pretty cold, as you can imagine, and it's also a bit wet at the moment. There's been sort of a steady drizzle throughout the day since we've been here since early this morning. But over the weekend, there has been really heavy snowfall. A snowstorm hit the region on Saturday night, and that is when this group of people did get into trouble and became stuck up near the Dargo High Plains Road, as you mentioned. Around 50 centimetres of snow, so a deluge, fell and made these conditions quite treacherous, as the SES has described it up there.
Are there concerns that there could be more travellers stranded?
No, so we've just heard from police in the last little while this afternoon, and they have confirmed that the remaining six that spent two nights in their vehicle, they have been found and have been taken out safely. The focus has now turned to doing a sweep of the Great Alpine Road, which is that big stretch of road up at Mount Hotham. There's a lot of little campsites and tracks up there that are very popular, especially at this time of year being a long weekend. So they're just going in there to make sure that there aren't any other people that may be stuck, but they're quite confident that everybody has now been accounted for.
Ashley, like you said, the police have just recently spoken about conditions at Mount Hotham. Here's what Inspector Tracy Johnson had to say to the media.
To sum up until now, 13 people have been rescued following reports of several cars being stuck due to heavy snowfall that occurred around 10:30 p.m. on the 7th of June. In relation to that time frame, a man in his 40s was treated for minor injuries after his vehicle rolled. To this time, there have been no further issues as a result of that incident. We're warning snowgoers to obey road closure signs to allow emergency services to continue their work at this time. They're also continuing to search the area to identify if there are any further people who require rescue.
Inspector Tracy Johnson speaking to the media a short time ago. It's obviously a busy time, Ashley. How well staffed are emergency services?
Yeah, they are very well staffed. They're very equipped for this time of year. We've seen a steady flow of emergency services coming back down the hill or the mountain, just as we've been standing here this afternoon, equipped with all the specialist equipment. There is a specialised Alpine search and rescue unit that operates out of Bright as well, and they were called in today to assist with this rescue when the heavy snow was causing or posing a bit of a problem with this rescue.
Ashley, as you said, 50 centimetres of snow, which is counted as a deluge. That was quite some snow to come in one go. How's it looking for the rest of the week, though?
Yeah, the conditions are otherwise really ideal up there. And the resorts, we've spoken to them over the past few days and they are just thrilled with how things are looking after a few tough years up there. But their lifts and the ski slopes were opened, a lot opened yesterday. So ideal conditions up there, which has really put everyone in a great mood up on the mountain.
And did the snow come early this year, Ashley?
No, it actually came right on time. So the official ski season for Victoria opened on Saturday, and that's sort of when we saw the real heavy snowfalls come. So it was really ideal timing for most people up there, other than these people, obviously, that have run into a bit of trouble up there.
And Ashley, are they expecting the snowfields to be busy this year?
I guess they're always hopeful. It is only the start of the season, so it's hard to say what conditions will be like in the coming months. But so far, this is an spoke with Mount Buller on Saturday, and the lady there said that it's really been the ideal opening weekend for them, so they're really hopeful that that will continue.
Good to hear. Ashley Aldridge in Bright at the bottom of Mount Hotham. Thanks very much for talking to Australia Wide.
My pleasure.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide.
A popular tourist town in Western Australia's south says visitors are likely to face increased costs due to power shortages. Bremer Bay business owners say buying expensive diesel generators appears to be the only option available to avoid blackouts as rolling outages plague the tourist town. Andrew Chanding has filed this story for us.
On WA's south coast, Bremer Bay is a popular tourist town with a perennial power problem.
We've had the business for 22 years. Over the years, there are lots of power issues, but in the recent months, we've noticed it growing increasingly worse, which is quite alarming. So we have outages quite regularly and quite often, anywhere from a 10-second outage to a 1 hour or even more on a regular basis.
Melissa Joy owns and operates the Bremer Bay Resort. It's a pub, restaurant and hotel that can accommodate around 400 guests at any given time. But swelling tourist numbers are placing a strain on the town's limited power supply.
It seems to be worst when we have high numbers coming to town, so holiday time. Just for an example, the recent Easter holidays, we had some very severe outages which impacted, I would say, all businesses and households in the area. There's a lot of tourists come to Bremer Bay, particularly over holiday periods, for example Easter. It puts a strain on resources, a strain on the power, and therefore there's not enough to go around, so we've been told, and without any warning we will just have a blackout, usually in peak time.
After raising the issue with the state-run power provider Western Power, Melissa Joyce says finding a solution to the problem was put back onto the business.
I have had conversations with Western Power after lodging report after report after report, and recently was told it's only going to get worse for Bremer Bay with the amount of people that are coming to town, especially in holiday times. It's not going to get any better, so we really need to look at getting a generator or a solar or a battery backup or some sort of system, as a lot of businesses in town and houses have done, because it's just not going to be reliable.
So you've been told to get your own generation unit if you want to maintain power?
Yeah, so we're in the process now of buying or purchasing a generator for the business. It's not going to back up everything. It's not going to keep us completely up and running. But we haven't really got a choice. We have to do that.
Western Power denied claims it advised businesses in the region to purchase diesel generators, and in a statement said it understood the frustration unplanned power outages caused residents and acknowledged the community was prone to more blackouts, but said it was exploring solutions to improve reliability. But other businesses say the town's power problems have only gotten worse.
It's probably the worst year we've had in over the years. So there was three particular occasions over the course of 4 days where we had to run solely on cash.
Danielle Formica manages the Bremer Bay General Store.
Now, while everyone's trying to push a cashless society, they can't just run down to the bank and get some cash out. You know, the other businesses in town are also without power. So we're having to, what we do is defer for our locals where they can come back and pay later. But while the locals are a population of about 300-400 and the majority are 15,000-20,000+ tourists, we're not just going to give an IOU. So, I mean, we lost thousands here at the store simply because they couldn't buy what they wanted. And on top of that, the tourists can't get their milk and their bread and enjoy their holidays. It's just not acceptable.
The store is also turning to a similar power solution.
The owners just forked out $30,000 for a new generator, which won't be reimbursed in any way. You know, the fuel prices are on us.
The situation has brought into focus the complexity of WA's legislated power monopoly. Western Power, a statutory corporation, is responsible for the construction and maintenance of the Southwest Interconnected System, the state's largest energy network. But the retailer Synergy is responsible for the generation and sale of power to customers connected to that network. A Synergy spokesperson said it wasn't responsible for the Bremer Bay power supply, but did operate a backup wind diesel power plant that had the capacity to provide 40% of the town's energy requirements. It also said 4 Synergy-owned backup diesel generators were available to Western Power when managing network outages in the region. However, the patchwork of backup energy infrastructure has infuriated residents who are also being forced to find options to power essential appliances. Paul Taylor bought a house at Bremer Bay with the aim of retiring on the south coast, but the unstable power has impacted those plans.
I've got a paralysed diaphragm, which is called neuropathy of the diaphragm, which means that my diaphragm doesn't work. And when I lie down to go to sleep, my diaphragm falls against my lungs and it makes it very difficult for me to breathe. So my doctors have put me on a CPAP machine for that reason, so I can sleep at night time. And of course, when there's a power failure at the moment, not having a generator, I have to get up. I can't stay lying down. So I have to get up, go and sit in a chair and try and fall asleep. But anybody knows that when you're trying to sit up and sleep, it's not a good way to sleep. And it could take hours. You know, sometimes I've gone till the next morning where I've had to sit in a chair because the power failure was all night.
The 66-year-old also looking at ways to stabilise his own power needs.
I'm looking at options as either having to buy a generator or a CPAP machine that has its own battery system, whereby if there is a power failure, but these things are, you know, like $10,000. So it's not a good option.
Bremer Bay resident Paul Taylor ending that story from Andrew Chounding. They were once postcard-perfect playgrounds for celebrities and holidaymakers. Now many of Queensland's island resorts are crumbling. The state government says enough is enough and has started seizing leases from operators who've let the tropical paradises fall into ruin. National tourism reporter Christy Sexton-McGrath has this story.
Queensland's island resorts were once the crown jewels of the state's tourism industry, the ultimate escape for visitors. But today, many stand neglected, overgrown and in disrepair. Premier David Crisafulli says the downward spiral must stop. He's given a clear ultimatum to owners: invest in their properties or risk losing their leases.
Use it or lose it. It's pretty simple. They are assets that belong to the people of Queensland. They're a Queensland asset. And I'm just not comfortable that in many cases, international corporations come in, buy the rights, sit on it and just see an appreciation in its value without doing anything for Queenslanders.
At the top of the government's list is Double Island near Cairns, once a celebrity hideaway. Now buildings are collapsing, pools clogged with sludge and weeds have taken over. Last year, the state government stripped the Hong Kong-based leaseholder of control, converted the lease to freehold and opened a lengthy expression of interest process to find a new buyer. The ABC understands more than 30 parties have come forward, but officials say they're looking for someone with deep pockets and a genuine plan to bring the island back to life. Further south near Mackay, Keswick Island has faced years of stalled development and limited public access, sparking frustration among long-time residents like Adrian Hain.
This goes back probably more than 20 years. Based on a grand master plan that was released back in the 90s, a lot of people had bought land on the island with the promise that they would develop the island. There was supposed to be a marina, a jetty, resorts. And since then, I think we've had 4 separate head lease take over the island and 4 failures.
He says multiple failed development attempts have left the island a shadow of what was promised decades ago.
The ferry is, from a percentage point of view, maybe 80% broken down, constantly requiring parts which they have to get in from Sweden. There's no shops on the island, so, you know, people rely on the ferry to get food to the island.
Island broker Hayley Manville says the interest in Queensland's tropical islands has never been higher. She's sold 6 in recent years.
Essentially, it's the lifestyles of the rich and the famous. So you get many different billionaires, multimillionaires, high net worth individuals that, you know, they're looking for something, some kind of tourism investment. But then you also have mixed interest from different groups, like not-for-profit groups that are looking to do some form of alternate use, be it wellness or a facility for rehabilitation. It is very diverse. We get a lot of inquiry. A lot of it, unfortunately, you spin your wheels with many different people that have dreams and they may not have the capacity to, I guess, do the development that they would like to do. Islands, they get a lot of press first and foremost, and so that kind of brings people out from the whole spectrum. You know, you get a lot of con artists.
businessman Christopher Morris, who's invested tens of millions of dollars reviving rundown resorts in North Queensland, says island ownership is no easy ride. He purchased Orpheus Island and then Polaris Island off Townsville more than a decade ago and has spent tens of millions redeveloping them.
Make sure you've got a big bank balance before you start. It probably costs double to run a resort on an island than it does on the mainland.
Mr. Morris says he has his eye on Double Island off Cairns as a potential third purchase, though other bidders are also in the mix. He agrees with the government's crackdown on shonky leaseholders, but says not all islands are suited to resort development.
There's some islands that basically should just stay national parks, right? And people can go and walk there and everything else, camp, but you know, there's a limit to how many islands we can support.
As the billionaires circle, island residents like Adrian Hayne just want the basics, a working ferry, a shop, and a future that lives up to decades-old promises.
Selling the island's one thing, but making sure these things get done is a whole different ballgame.
National tourism reporter Christy Sexton-McGrath with that story on the derelict Paradise Islands of Queensland. Farmers across southern Australia are counting the cost on their mental health caused by one of the worst droughts in living memory. With parts of the country experiencing record dry conditions for well over a year, the battle to keep livestock alive and grow crops without decent rain has taken a toll on farmers and their families. But there is support available and more farmers are accessing it. Selena Green has this story.
Steph Schmidt is in a unique position. As a psychologist and farmer, she's been travelling South Australia delivering mental health workshops to drought-affected farmers, while also living the reality of drought at her own farm at World's End in the state's north.
It's honestly like it's a daily roller coaster. So yeah, we've got three young boys and a mixed sheep and cropping farm, and it's the daily decisions of what are we doing with the crop that's going in, or what's the feeding, what are the decisions going to be in another couple of weeks' time if the rains don't come. It takes its toll on us as individuals. It plays out in our relationships.
Ms Schmidt wants farmers to feel comfortable with acknowledging their struggles.
We explore what the signposts of stress might be, and often there's that realisation that I'm not the only one experiencing this. This is what a lot of people are experiencing. So I think that validation of just how hard it is. And then also just, I guess, I really emphasise for people, it's about taking the smaller step to improve or to take care of themselves, letting people know that right now we're not aiming for thriving up here. We might just be more aiming for surviving and getting through day to day.
Andrew Shepherd's farm is located in the usually reliable rainfall zone in South Australia's southeast. But as he's realised over the past year, that's no longer the case.
Oh, look, I think if we tried to tell our kids, you know, that 10 years ago that we'd be where we are now, no one would believe us, you know. At least we started last year with a bit of subsoil moisture. This year we're going in with nothing in the bank. So, yeah, it's been pretty tough.
Last year, Mr. Shepherd and some mates set up a Narracourt chapter of Fat Farmers, a tongue-in-cheek name for an exercise group set up by farmers to encourage physical exercise and the mental health benefits that come with it. Fat Farmers now has numerous groups across South Australia and is working to expand nationally.
Anyone that's doing any running or any sort of sport, you know yourself, you feel better. So doing it in a group of people, we're talking, we're out there, we're getting off the farm, we're getting away from the stress of, you know, what's happening, especially out here at the moment. Given what's going on with the season and the economy at the moment, there's probably no better time to be promoting Fat Farmers and programs like that. So, you know, it's just an opportunity for us to debrief and talk about other things other than the farm and have a bit of a laugh, exercise, but also keep an eye out for our mates that are going as well.
Clinical psychologist Dr. Kate Gunn founded the online farmer mental health resource iFarmWell, which has seen a double in use this past year. She believes that's a good thing and that farmers are getting better at acknowledging the need to reach out for help for their mental health.
I'd suggest just going to your GP is a really good place to start. There's emergency phone numbers if you find yourself in a really, really stressful situation. And there's websites like iFarmWell, which are designed not just for farmers, but for whole farming communities. And also all those people who support farmers, whether that be agronomists or stock agents. So there's a whole raft of people who can benefit from that sort of help and also identify with the farming culture, which is really important because often farmers feel like they're not understood by health professionals or outsiders. So having access to services and information that really is targeted at the farming community can make it a lot more accessible.
Rural Aid offers free mental health programs, including one-on-one professional counselling via on-farm visits and regular check-in calls. Its CEO, John Walters, says there's been a 55% increase in new mental health referrals this past year.
Look, we've seen at Rural Aid, seen a real upswing of calls and people reaching out to Rural Aid, particularly in the last month. It's almost like on a weekly basis, there's half a dozen to a dozen people just jumping on the phones, wanting to connect with Rural Aid, wanting to connect with our counsellors, and wanting to just generally connect to explore how assistance can be directed in their way. And I really think that's just symptomatic of them reaching a point where they've been really tested from a financial perspective, they've been really tested emotionally, and they've really cleverly or wisely recognised that maybe I do need a little bit of help and support, and an organisation like Rural Aid might be able to just be a contributor to what they need at a time like this.
With some cautious optimism of some drought-breaking rain into winter, Dr Gunn is warning that it won't wash away the lingering impacts of years of drought, and ongoing support will be needed.
When it rains, it doesn't wash all the worries away, unfortunately. Farmers will still have debt that they have to service. It'll take a long time to rebuild stock. It'll take a long time for crops to grow. So if it rains, that'll be great, and it will certainly give people hope, but it doesn't translate immediately to zero mental health problems.
Professor Kate Gunn, founder of I Farm Well, ending that story from our reporter, Celine Green. Mud and mould are not the only issues facing those returning to their homes after major flooding on the New South Wales mid-north coast. One family has reported returning to their property near Kempsey to discover more than 30 snakes taking refuge there and a large amount of spiders. The New South Wales Reconstruction Authority says it's working hard to get residents still displaced from their properties back home as soon as possible. Emma Seosian has this story.
Julie Botfield lives in a rural area at Clybucca near Kempsey and was evacuated by boat with two of her children and their dogs during the height of the flooding on the mid-north coast in late May. She says when she returned to the rural property to inspect it a week and a half later, she was shocked by what she discovered. Snakes, and a lot of them, which had her heart racing.
The snakes and the spiders and that were an issue of me trying to get in there and getting them out. There was 30 snakes found in the shed alone. So my house is a creamy beige colour, and when I left, when we evacuated, was black on all sides of the house, including the brickwork down below.
Wow, with the spiders?
Yeah, with spiders. So I had the pest man come and do a spray of the property a couple of days ago, and he said it's the worst property he's ever done in his life. It's just like clean up with the mould. So because the house was left unattended because we couldn't get in here, A, because of the water, B, because of the snakes and spiders, it was sitting in the water for quite some time. So now the mould's gone through the house, so it's just a big clean up effort.
Julie reached out for help on social media and was assisted by Brendan Kendall, who lives near Kempsey and helps people needing snakes relocated.
I'd seen a few little baby snakes up and down the driveway just walking up. There weren't a great deal out there to begin with. Some of them were still hiding up in the shed. Once we got access to there, we ended up with a total of 30 snakes caught. Seen a handful of times where there's been three or four snakes, but never 30. There was a mixture of red bellies, there were a few baby eastern brown snakes, there were some little marsh snakes, just a whole bunch of different ones. But when it floods like this, a lot of them lose where they've been nesting up, and coming into the colder months, well, this is the time where they're sort of slowing down, they're not as active as what they'd normally be, and obviously this amount of water that we've had is well and truly moved a lot of them on from where they would normally be, and they're just trying to find somewhere a little bit warmer and a little bit dry where there's still food. And unfortunately for a lot of people, that ends up being their house or their shed and a lot of places like that.
The New South Wales Reconstruction Authority Recovery Coordinator, Dave Owens, says it's not uncommon for animals to take refuge in uninhabited properties after floods.
When people go back in, it's not just the flood water, the mud on the ground, or, you know, it's snakes, it's spiders, it's all other creatures. You've just got to be careful when you're going through. And if water has been through as well, you've got to be careful of, through the waterways, there's been a whole lot of drums and everything with, you know, chemicals and that in it, because it went, you know, it didn't differentiate. It went through farms, sheds, residents, everything. So people just need to be aware and be on guard, you know, is the best way to say it. If there are any issues, of course, they can go to the recovery centre and we'll point them in the right direction.
At the end of last week, around 700 residential properties across the region were still deemed uninhabitable, with a focus on getting displaced families back home.
It could be as simple as it's have water across the floor, we need to get a sparky in there to make sure and check that it's safe, and then it's actually, they can move back in. A lot of people, we understand as well, have gone to family and friends. Couch surfing has been used, the term, to me, so we need to capture all those people as well.
It's a long process, Emma Seosian reporting there. And you can see photos of all those snakes in Emma's online piece on ABC News. And finally to Broome in Western Australia's far north, where tourism is well underway. The influx of tourists has kept lifesavers busy with a spate of rescues over the past week on the famous Cable Beach. One of those pulling people out of the water was a local priest, Father Liam Ryan, who spoke to Ruby Littler about his rescue efforts.
He's known for delivering sermons on Sunday and attending nursing homes and primary schools to spread the word of God. But in the Broome community, Father Liam Ryan is actually more commonly known for something else.
I've surfed, yeah, for a lot of my life now. Broome, we don't usually get much surf, but yeah, it was a day that there was a little bit, just a bump.
His love of the ocean and sense of duty collided last weekend while he was surfing out off Cable Beach.
Yeah, it happened pretty quickly. Saw a couple of fellas who looked like they were getting pretty close to where a little flash rip was, and so just had an eye on them. And then, just very quickly, it looked like they moved from being in a place where they were comfortable and feet on the sandbar to being kind of swept off their feet. And and then when I heard one of them coughing, I'd yelled out to see if they were okay, and no response.
Father Ryan paddled over, and within seconds, one of the swimmers had clambered onto his board, relieved at the sight of help.
No, yeah, being in a tourist town, I think we do get a few people who are not familiar with being around open water. And although most of the time it's calm here, the ocean's the ocean, right? And you need to show her a bit of respect. And I think they just got caught out. Yeah, being familiar with things like rips and not being confident swimmers. I think as well, often when we're in situations where we're beyond our comfort zone, that panic and stress starts to affect your body's flotation.
The rescue was not his first foray into saving desperate swimmers. He received an Australian Bravery Award in 2022 for saving someone who was bitten by a great white shark in Bunker Bay in the state's southwest 2 years prior.
Similar situation, but a little bit scarier, I'd say. Yeah, young fella who I've now become life friends with was bitten by a great white shark down in Bunker Bay, and happened to be there with my best mate and another fella and we ended up helping him out and getting him in and sorting him out a bit. And again, that was another thing where the community really band together, and a few surfers were on the shore and had called for help, and he lived to tell the tale.
The pair became lifelong friends who still keep in touch to this day.
Yeah, it was a bit of a legend and nominated us for an award, so we ended up getting a little bit of a pat on the back for that one. So we got the gong from the gov, we say, got the medal, so it's sitting there somewhere gathering dust on the shelf.
Father Ryan said it's about rallying together and helping out those in need.
I suppose it's one of those things where I remember being a young fella and being rescued when I was swimming after a thong. They got caught in a rip, and then me and my brothers were caught in a rip. And I just, you know, I think it's one of those things where there's something deep within you that wants to help other people if you can. And if you've got the nous and, I suppose, confidence around water, we can all help each other out.
Last weekend's rescue at Cable Beach was not an isolated incident. There have been a spike in swimmers being caught in rips and getting into trouble outside the designated flagged area since the start of the tourist season. There were 4 rescues in 5 days at Cable Beach, according to the West Coast Water Rescue, contracted to patrol the tourist destination by the local council.
I think we, growing up in Australia, you kind of know swimming between the flags is the safe place to be, but very quickly, if there's current or tides up here in Broome, is another thing that the water can look really calm, but if it's a big 9 metre tide, it might be sweeping in one direction or the other, and 1 minute you're in the flags, next minute you're on your own.
Swimmers are advised to swim between the flags, check the conditions, swim with a buddy, avoid alcohol and drugs, and be wary of rips. Or, as Father Ryan puts it,
don't be a dag and swim between the flags.
That's definitely spot on advice. Kimberley reporter Ruby Lickler speaking with Father Liam Ryan on Cable Beach. And that is Australia-wide for this Monday. I'm Sinead Mangan. Cheerio.
ABC Listen.